I've got Aaron Redding from the Port Townsend Psychedelic Society on the line. Aaron, can you hear me?
I can. Hi.
Okay, we did it. We managed this virtual connection in our virtual COVID world where we have linked these telephonic devices to the radio, and now we get to talk about whatever we want, and the FCC can't stop us unless we swear. So this is good. Welcome, Aaron. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So give us a little background on the Port Townsend Psychedelic Society. When did this organization come into existence? And give us a little background on that, because you're one of the founders, right?
Yeah, I'm one of the co-founders with Rebecca Ramsey, and we both started working on decriminalizing entheogens in Jefferson County in 2019, and she started it under the heading of the Port Townsend Psychedelic Society, and we were both working we're both in communication with Decriminalized Nature Oakland, which was the inspiration for us to begin a similar movement here. And they connected the two of us. So then I joined with her with the Port Townsend Psychedelic Society, and we started working together.
So the goal from the start was decriminalizing entheogens. And can you talk about why do you call them entheogens instead of, you know, say magic mushrooms or psychedelics? Like, you call them psychedelics in the name, but where is the context of her entheogens versus those other names?
Yeah, so we're using entheogens to refer to natural psychedelics, and those are the subcategory of psychedelics that we're currently working to decriminalize. So we're not currently working to decriminalize LSD or MDMA or synthetic DMT, even though we eventually would like those also decriminalized. That's just a bigger project. So entheogens is distinguished from the larger category of psychedelics by being the ones that are grown naturally. And
but that's interesting. Yeah. My understanding, you're talking about DMT or dimethyltryptamate, right? Is that the actual, how it's DMT? That's DMT, right?
That is a psychedelic that has both synthetic as well as natural versions.
But
so
you can
be working to decriminalize the natural version.
You can create a, well, not create, you can obviously create a synthetic version, but there are natural versions of DMT, right? I mean, that
correct.
can be procured for, you know, but it's something like it's a really complex process or something like that. But I guess
it
I hadn't.
Depends. I mean, DMT is an active ingredient in ayahuasca, and that's a very deep and profound process of creating ayahuasca, but it's not a complex one.
Got it. And that's in a root of a tree, right? Or something like that?
It's the mix of a vine and a root. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. And so that's interesting. I hadn't thought about, you know, entheogens as being, when you talk about entheogens, you're talking about things that are naturally derived, you know, like many of the cyanescence mushrooms that you could pick in Jefferson County, up off
correct.
The ground
yeah.
in October, whenever you, are lucky enough to find those. And then psychedelics are things that would have to be specifically created as a controlled substance by someone for other people to use.
Well, we include entheogens as a psychedelic. We're just specifically, and the Psychedelic Society is to provide education about all psychedelics, but where we're working specifically for decriminalization is with natural psychedelics, which we're calling entheogens to distinguish them from the larger category of psychedelics.
Got it. And I guess, you know, if you're comfortable talking about it, where did you come into this issue, and when, you know, when did it become important for you, and how did you connect it to Jefferson yeah. County?
Right. Well, that's a big question. I started working with psychedelics after I finished my undergrad in philosophy, and I'd been looking for philosophy as a way of life, and my philosophy program was very analytical and more a form of argumentation, which is not what I was seeking. And I was given several books on psychedelics and spent a year reading about them. I had a lot of propaganda in my brain. I actually gave the DARE speech in elementary school in sixth grade. So I had never smoked cannabis. I hadn't done anything. And so after a year of reading all these books, I felt ready to try it myself. And I took psilocybin mushrooms the first time and learned more in 6 hours than I learned in my entire philosophical career.
Yes.
About myself, about the world, about my perception of the world, my relationship to the planet, it was very profound and very influential. And I started going to psychedelic conferences, of which there were very few back then. This was in 2004. In 2006, I went to the conference where we celebrated Albert Hofmann's 100th birthday in Switzerland. And then I went to grad school to study psychedelics and philosophy at the California Institute of Integral Studies. So I was very involved in that world.
And Hofmann's the person who originally synthesized LSD, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. That's so cool. I mean, so for you, it was like this, a discovery of a way of educating yourself on things and meanings of life, not searching for meanings, but, you know, sort of like how far can a literary knowledge take me into, you know, really feeling connected to the world or trying to understand and puzzle out some of these things. And then, you know, as you did your research, you discovered that psychedelics might actually provide a path for you that there's no amount of reading could actually provide, learning or memorization. I fully get that. And it's, I've never really thought about it in terms that it might inspire people, you know, from an educational or an educational standpoint, I guess, you know, because, you know, when my first uses of mushrooms were recreational, but what I discovered is that it was such a process and such a trip, you know, because I would end up sort of accidentally, you know, taking these heroic doses and not really realizing what I had done, you know, and so doing it without education. And I'm the kind of person that doesn't do much preparatory work before I go and jump in and do something. You know, the learning process on that was just so quick, but I quickly realized that these aren't things you do for fun. Like, yeah, maybe you might have a good time at certain points of, you know, a psychedelic experience, but the purpose of it is much more, I would say, I don't like to use the word spiritual, but it is a reckoning with yourself that you cannot find in any other institution or world, you know, that we have kind of allowed, at least in American society, right? The specific to North American USCN society.
Right.
I'm wondering.
And how beautiful that it's a plant and fungi that are our teachers.
Right.
I just think that's beautiful.
Well, and of course, you know, Terence McKenna. So my favorite, you know, and I think he just threw this out as an anecdote, you know, for like the origin of life, but it's always stuck with me. And his thesis, a possible origin of life story is that, that psychedelic mushrooms, that psilocybin was cruising through space because mushroom spores are one of the few things that can survive in the vacuum of space. Landed on the planet, colonized the trees, and then the monkeys, the apes, started to eat the fungus off the trees, you know, for food. And then it was a merging of consciousness between our, you know, like the ape, you know, the not lesser, but the less evolved portion, and that consciousness is actually derived from, you know, psilocybin, from, or, you know, maybe ayahuasca or DMT, all these things, that it is that the origin of life could lie and the origin of consciousness could lie in these substances.
Definitely makes sense.
Yeah. I'm with that one still to this day. And then, you know, I it's not something, especially since I've had kids, it's not something I've been able to do frequently. But I always look at it as like my times with psychedelics were intensely therapeutic, and a lot of the ways that I really hated myself, the more repeated exposures, you know, about once a year I would use entheogens, and I lost this sense of fear about being alive. I lost most of like fear of death, which was extremely a huge hindrance for me being like what I consider myself to be now, a full human being. And you know, I see it as a overcoming depression, essentially, and overcoming, you know, such absolute fear. And I wouldn't have been able to do it. I don't believe I would have been able to do it without what I was shown by mushrooms by psilocybin, by entheogens. This is about me now, yeah. Sorry.
No, I appreciate your story. I think stories more than anything else help people realize the power of these plants to heal, to educate, to connect with each person's spirituality, whatever that may look like.
Well, now I'm really curious, though, Erin. Do you remember any of your DARE speech?
I actually don't. I could probably find it written somewhere. My mom saved a lot of papers, but it was very, stay off of drugs and psychedelics were definitely included in there. And I grew up with the attitude of, why would I ever take drugs? I like reality the way it is. Like, my life is already good, not realizing that it was similar to saying, I don't need to go to school. I don't need to learn anything. Why would I need to learn?
Right.
I just didn't understand at that point because I wasn't taught that these were educational
tools.
I don't want to say tools.
Tools, maybe as tools, not fully show what their potential is. I mean, I guess.
I feel like it would be a reduction to call them tools, but metaphorically it works.
Well, and if they're the origin of consciousness, it's actually like us getting in touch with the other, with a part of ourselves that is always there, but we cannot tap into it without, without chemical assistance, without, nature's assistance. Because I think that's so important, the way that you start to work on decriminalization efforts by drawing a distinction between what's the idea of people worrying about man-made drugs, whereas in terms of things that grow naturally, like we're having a renaissance in the United States with marijuana,
right.
Which is something that's, not to conflate it, because that's not what you're working on here. But I mean, it is like a stepping stone, for a couple ways. We need a society that, first of all, isn't putting people in jail for anything that, just goes against the norm and doesn't hurt other people.
Right.
And secondly, I'm not going to out. There's a person that's really important in my life. Like, I wouldn't be here without this person, never tried any drugs at all, except for, cognac at night. And she had such trouble going to sleep, and once they legalized marijuana in Washington state, she can sleep at night. She can use
right.
something that the stigma has been removed and it's actually medicine,
Right.
And, in my mind, what you're doing, the work you're doing is sort of taking it to the next level, because this is it's a philosophical medicine. And I mean, I don't know. Do you see it as medicine? I mean, is that medicine sort of like tools in that sense, where the word maybe doesn't fully encapsulate what you're trying to educate people on?
I think that medicine is one aspect of the potentials of entheogens. So some people come to it specifically for healing, for OCD, for headaches, for depression, for PTSD. And I think oftentimes they might come to it as a medicine, but the impact tends to be much broader than that.
Yeah. Yeah. So finding the right words in order to talk about these things, going forward is obviously going to be necessary. But I mean, we're gonna get into like the next steps in terms of bringing people, or at least reducing the harm that certain drug laws have had on folks in the second half of our talk. In the meantime, you brought a song by a local, I believe Samara Jade is a local artist, or at least is somehow connected to PT, right? Do you want to introduce the song you brought, Erin?
She spends a lot of time in PT. Yeah, it's one of her homes. And it's just one of my favorite songs. I think that a lot of the ways what the lyrics express in the song reflect what people experience sometimes on psychedelic journeys. So I feel like it's very reflective of what we're talking about. But I'll let the song speak for itself.
All right. This is Unseen Song by Samara Jade. We're talking to Erin Redding from the Port Townsend Psychedelic Society, and we'll be back to get even deeper on this in the second half of the first half of Filter. Stay tuned. Yeah, you're back on Filter. This is KPTZ 91.9 FM. We're talking to Erin Redding from the Port Townsend Psychedelic Society. She just played us a really great song, Samara Jade, Unseen song. And yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, that is, to me, a perfect, I mean, as perfect as you can say in words, encapsulation of what it feels like when you're really having a psychedelic experience that is teaching you things like, they were there all along, cut through my aloneness and found my oneness. I mean, yeah, good, great choice.
Well, thanks, Samara.
Yeah. Part of the reason we're talking right now is because just recently, a woman was arrested for possession of psychedelic substances or magic mushrooms. Can you give us a little background on the case and how the Port Townsend Psychedelic Society got involved with this?
Yeah, so back last in 2019, when we first presented our resolution to the City Council and County Commissioners, they basically responded saying that there hadn't been a charge in 20 years and they felt like entheogens were already de facto decriminalized. So until there was a charge or something happened that made it evident that there was an issue, they didn't want to put the time and money into making the change unless we had a lot of people pressure them, which we didn't get in time before COVID hit, although we were working on it. So when this case happened, it was a woman who was parked on the side of the road and a police officer pulled behind her, asked what she was doing there, and she was picking up a friend late at night and waiting for her friend and offered to show her ID. And the cop, as she was pulling things out of her purse, looking for her ID, she pulled out a bag of psilocybin mushrooms and threw it on the floor. And immediately the police officer asked her what it was, asked if they were brown tops or psilocybin mushrooms. And when she affirmed that they probably were, that a friend had given them to her, he immediately arrested her and, you know, read her rights and put her in the cop car.
Mm.
So she was arrested 100% for psilocybin mushrooms. Later on, they found a small amount of oxycodone also on a keychain. So there's been a couple articles that have made it sound like she was arrested for that, but she was arrested 100% for the mushrooms alone. And then later on, they added that charge when they found the oxycodone later on.
Yeah.
So that's what we needed to make the point that they are not de facto decriminalized. And there were other reasons. There's so many reasons to decriminalize entheogens, but that's how we got involved. We found out that someone had been arrested and then immediately restarted our campaign to decriminalize entheogens locally.
The other thing I don't like about this story, I mean, is, and I mean, this almost doesn't even have specifically to do with psychedelics. I just want to point it out for people who are listening and are interested. You don't have to show your ID. That was a courtesy that she did for the officer. And obviously, you know, police are going to intimidate you and make you feel like you have to show your ID, but you don't, you don't. And, I, in some ways it's like, it's good that this is a chance, you know, to kind of show and for the Psychedelic Society to stand up and say, look, this is an issue. But you know, keep in mind, you do not have to show your ID to, yeah, you did not, she did not have to show her ID in that context. So, if anybody's curious about that, you can talk to my lawyer. No, that's not legal advice either. but you know, that's my understanding of the law.
Yeah, and one of the funny things that happened with the police officer is he didn't really even know that much about psilocybin. He had to go look it up on his computer and then read on his computer, which is why this is a systemic problem, that they were Schedule 1, which means technically they have a high potential for abuse. That means they're highly addictive and have no medical value. And both those things are blatantly false. They've always been blatantly false. There's always been evidence to the contrary. So, but as a police officer, he's looking in his system at the Department of Justice, what that website says. And then, you know, he gets out and says to his fellow officers, did you know psilocybin was Schedule 1? High potential for abuse. But,
wow.
You know, it's not his fault, but it's also not true. And that's why we need to decriminalize. Like, that's why that needs to happen.
Well, it's also like he arrested her based on that information that he didn't actually like know what schedule, you know, mushrooms were and was shocked at the severity of it. That's almost like, okay, well, why? I mean, yeah, it's, and, I mean, what's been the reaction around this case? What kind of work has the society been doing? And you know, how can folks who are interested get involved? And, you know, if they're similar minded, how can they support your cause in this?
Yeah, right now we're really focusing on communicating with the county commissioners and the city council. And they operate in different ways. So the city council has direct say over the funding of the police department. And so they can direct funding so that there's no funding for pursuance of any cases involving entheogens. And so writing the city council letters, writing public comments, that really helps in support of decriminalization. At the county level, it's a bit different. They do not have direct say over the prosecuting attorney or the sheriff's department because they are independently elected and direct their own funding. So they can call upon the sheriff and the prosecuting attorney to voluntarily make those changes, but that does have to happen at a different level. So right now what the county is saying they want to do, it feels like we have their full support. I think that they're still trying to understand what they can do, and Greg Brotherton has been super supportive, and he wants to write an aspirational resolution similar to the ban on nuclear weapons that states a philosophy and a direction they want things to go, and then also start community conversations where they invite someone from the sheriff's office, they invite someone from the prosecuting attorney's office, and someone from the city council, and we begin having a conversation about what needs to change and how we can make that happen.
So how?
So that's where we're at with them right now.
How has it been, like, what is the Jefferson County prosecuting attorney's stance on this? Who I note, James Kennedy will be on Filter next Friday, not talking about this case, but, you know, how has he addressed this issue in terms of, you know, their plans for prosecution and, you know, feelings about decriminalization going forward?
Yeah, I've had what has felt to me like very frustrating conversations with him. I feel or email conversations. His stance is that he doesn't want to drop the charge because he feels like it's one more thing to lead to the woman being put in drug rehab. And he thinks she may have a problem with opiates, which may or may not be true. But he feels like he doesn't want to drop the charge for entheogens, even though he acknowledges that entheogens are not a problem. He wants to be able to use that to try to get her to treatment. Which, to me, I mean, alcohol is way more dangerous than psilocybin mushrooms. Psilocybin mushrooms actually help with addiction, but we don't make alcohol illegal in order to send people to drug rehab so we have one more thing to arrest them for. Like, that does not feel like a cogent approach to me. And so I'm hoping once this case is over, it doesn't feel right now that he's going to drop the charge, but I do hope that he will support the resolution afterwards. We really need his support to have it extend countywide. And I don't know if you heard, but Ann Arbor recently decriminalized entheogens, and their county prosecutor, who is super amazing, he immediately extended it countywide and made it even more detailed. And is going to also expunge records of anyone who's been involved with these plants and fungi. So, you know, a lot of what James Kennedy has said is that he can't do anything. He's taken an oath. He has to, you know, enforce state law. And if we want to make changes, we have to do it at the state level. But that's not true, as has been shown in Washtenaw County. So he does have the power to write a policy directive that takes funding away from pursuance of all charges relating to entheogens. And we hope that he chooses to do that.
But it sounds like, based on your conversations with him, at least, that they're not seeking jail time in this case, that the goal is drug court, which in Jefferson County, you know, is... I mean, something that I know is somewhat more progressive than other counties where, you know, you go into a treatment program, you're not institutionalized in that sense. I mean, do you have any sense of that, if that's the goal, or are they still seeking, you know, jail time for this person?
Well, I highly doubt they're seeking jail time, which I think is wonderful. However, if Annie is sent, her name is Annie, if she is sent to drug court and still has a felony charge, then, you know, that can prevent people from getting financial aid for education, from getting housing, from getting jobs. So it's also really important that she doesn't end up with a felony. And then I think that if they want to get her to drug court for opiates, they should just have the charge for opiates. I don't understand why they need to have a charge for entheogens if that has nothing to do with the charge for opiates, and which is what you would need treatment for. Not, you don't need treatment for working with psilocybin.
So there's an additional charge for the opiates on top of the psilocybin
Correct.
Charge.
Right.
Interesting.
And we're not asking him to drop that charge. I mean, I do think that those all drugs should eventually be decriminalized, but that's not what we're working on right now, and that's not the charge we're asking him to drop.
Yeah. Okay. So it sounds like there is at least a conversation. Nothing's being stymied, really, but there is. It's sort of an ongoing thing. So what are the next steps for Annie? Does she have a trial coming up?
I think her trial is in February. I'm not totally positive, but I think that is what is next for her.
Got it. Wow. So
and our next steps with the county commissioners are to, they're in process of making that meeting happen. It'll be a public meeting, so attending that. And then with the city council, I think they're in process of having the city attorney write up a resolution and then sending it through their safety committee and bringing it back to the city council to vote on. So we hope that that gets passed soon, so that we can at least have them be criminalized at the city level and then focus more on the county level after that.
And so you're asking,
criminalized,
go ahead. Well, you're asking for decriminalization. And I guess just wanted to get the context for decriminalization versus like legalization in this case. You talk about that?
Yeah, so we strongly believe that decriminalization needs to happen before legalization, and part of that comes from
what's the difference there
cannabis.
For people who don't understand. What's the difference?
So if entheogens are legalized, they will probably only be legalized in a regulated way. So you would only be able to get them through commercial outfits, through, or possibly even restricted only to access through medical pathways or therapy. So many of the ways that people work with mushrooms right now, which we believe people have a basic right to, are taking them and eating them, or taking them in a community ceremony, or taking them out in nature, or in a in like an indigenous ceremonial context, which would probably be illegal if they were regulated. So we want to make sure that people have the basic right to grow, gift, gather these substances, these natural substances, and partake in them in ways that are safe and responsible for them to choose what those ways look like for themselves. And there's also a lot of companies right now that are already investing in synthetic versions of psilocybin. So we want to make sure we don't end up with legal access through certain avenues where people can take psychedelics, but then people still being persecuted that are taking it outside of those regulated, limited contexts.
Mm. Interesting.
And we also don't want them to be commodified and commercialized. Like you said, like they're natural substances. They are the most profound teachers I've ever had, and I don't believe that we should be taking away or criminalizing any use of these substances. I think we need to be educating people on how to use them safely and responsibly and empowering people to make their own choices around them.
And in the work that you've been doing so far, have you found mostly support or, you know, what has been the response from the public that you've talked to and interacted with in Jefferson County around this issue?
By and large, it's been very supportive. I feel like it's a pretty nonpartisan issue. You know, psychedelics help veterans. Most people don't want government interfering in what we partake in if it doesn't harm anyone else. People are pretty aware of the healing benefits of these substances now. The main resistance we've received from mostly just Facebook comments involve people who do want them regulated, and most of these people don't really understand the low risk of psychedelics because they have been grouped with heroin and cannabis, which obviously also doesn't have really harmful effects, but as a Schedule I substance. So a lot of people haven't distinguished entheogens from many other harmful drugs. So I can understand why they're saying that. But I feel like most of the resistance we've had has been from people who haven't thoroughly understood what entheogens are, what potentials they have, and what safe and responsible use can look like in community.
And that's something that your society can aim to do is to help with that education. So if people have questions about, you know, what's the difference between, you know, an entheogen and, you know, and a harder drug. I mean, how can they reach out and get resources from you on this? Because you, Aaron, yourself, I was moved by you talking about how you were learning about philosophy, but you kind of had to self-educate before you were comfortable enough to try these experiences. So how can you help people understand better about what these teachers are?
Yeah. So that's the part of our website we're working on right now. After COVID, we want to have a lot more educational community events where we provide information about different ways to work with them, the different plans, their different potentials. Right now, we're working more on an online resource guide for, you know, different, there's a lot of information online, so connecting people to reputable sources and guides. And then we also want to connect people, we want to build community around psychedelics, because a lot of the support that helps people integrate experiences and have good outcomes are comes from being around other people who can help them process their experiences, help them implement the things they learn from their experiences, give them feedback. And we also, in Jefferson County, have a huge underground network of people that are doing this work, both in their own lives, in ceremony, and you know, in a lot of different contexts. So we have a huge resource that right now, you know, is at risk of legal problems. So when these things are decriminalized, we'll probably spend a lot more time connecting people to safe contexts and also teaching people how to create their own safe context, because I really believe that psychedelics can be held in ways with a lot of integrity within each person's own community.
Mm. Thank you so much for being here, Erin. I want to note that you're going to be on the Compass tomorrow too. Saturday,
yeah.
Steve Evans is interviewing you. Right. And that'll be tomorrow at noon, and it'll repeat the following Monday at noon and at 5 PM. So check out the Compass. We usually don't KPTZ do these crossover things, but you know, Steve and I were just on the same wavelength this week and we didn't talk. So we've got our fingers on the pulse, but you know, seriously, like, thank
totally.
You so much for being here and talking about this stuff with such openness. I mean, last week we talked to Trent Diamante about the opioid epidemic. I mean, speaking of that and his experiences
right.
through that and recovering, you know, and I think the only way we have health as a society is if we have these open conversations to help us understand these things better and not just write them off.
Right.
And, you know, so, you know, you being brave and doing the work and being able to say, you know, I have these experiences and these experiences have made my life better. And people shouldn't go to jail for them, and people shouldn't risk, you know, I mean, any kind of police intervention based on these substances, a possession of these substances. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for your work for yourself and on behalf of the Port Townsend Psychedelic Society.
Absolutely. And thanks for sharing your story, too.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Thanks for the conversation.
Yeah, yeah. Well, tune in tomorrow, Saturday at noon, and you can hear Erin again. And maybe we'll have Erin on the show in the next couple months to catch up and see what has changed, if anything, on the decriminalization front in Jefferson County.
Sounds great. Thank
you. You have a good one, Erin. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. Take care.
Bye.